This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio. Good to have you here. Thank you for your listenership. We wouldn't have done this for 10 years without you. As we say, your learning curve here on the show is episodic, because that's what we do. We record episodes. I want to thank so much our great, great sponsors that have been with us for such a long time. More than 16% of light-duty vehicles on the road are EV and hybrid. Is your shop ready to safely and properly service them? Get your shop trained and equipped to service hybrid and EV vehicles with NAPA AutoTech's innovative EV-ready Level 1 high-voltage awareness and maintenance training. Hey, for over 30 years, NAPA Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the best, most comprehensive SMS in the industry. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Find NAPA Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. Hey, I'd like to introduce you now to Siju Thomas. Hello, Siju. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Carm. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate you being, you know, a titan and thought leader in this industry.
Wow. Okay. I'll send you a check. Thank you so much. You've been on the show before, and we kind of connected here just recently because I'm dying to do a show on scaling. And this show, for everyone's interest, is about how to grow your business. Siju has 5 shops, and he whispered in my ear, and he says, Carm, we may have 2 more by the end of the year. So congrats to you. I know it's a tough job, a lot of work. But the unique thing about your company is that I believe every shop has a different name.
4 out of the 5 have different names. And the philosophy is very simple. We want to grow where communities still feel like those shops are part of the neighborhood. That local neighborhood shop is more important than having one brand plastered all over a city.
Makes sense to me. And I know one of the things that you want to talk about a little later on in the show is try not to become corporate-y.
That's right. It's a big risk. And certainly with the type of automotive professionals we have that have been grown and reared through family-owned small businesses, the thought of being corporate with disingenuous values on the wall is something that is highly unattractive. The idea of mom and pop small business owner being heavily engaged in a shop is something that's attractive to automotive professionals. And frankly, in a service-oriented business, it's how you deliver the best service for customers.
So let's jump in this thing. There's a lot of shop owners today that would love to go to their second store, and some that have 2 want to go to 3 and 4. And the learning curve is huge. But that seems to be a very interesting trend. But you can't go to store 2 if store 1 isn't humming. You've got to have the right profit on the bottom line for any financial institution to look at it, and for you to even attempt to come up with the money, even though you may have owner financing, to go to store 2, because it's a lot more than just making the acquisition, it's running it. And I want to hit your first talking point. Maintaining high standards is so challenging the bigger you get. And, you know, it's great to have, you know, the rooster and the chickens in the hen house, but as soon as you get detached, the challenge is immense.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right, Carm. There's a lot of things that come with maintaining a high standard. The first is, what sort of management and leadership do you have in place? Because ultimately, if you're going to 2, 3, 5, 10 shops, the reality is the owner can't be there every time there's a problem. The owner can't be there to ensure that vehicle's delivered on time. The owner cannot be there to ensure that conversation with the customer is always happening with the highest level of integrity and urgency. So one of the keys in scaling is owners recognizing their job changes. A key part of their job must be encouraging and investing their management team. Because if you don't have great managers, then you're not going to be able to ensure that the day-to-day operations happen well. And you can't just hire someone great. Owners have to look at themselves and say, how am I going to develop as a leader, not just an owner? Anyone can be an owner, but that doesn't mean you're a great leader. And being a leader must have a sense of developing your people, giving them the authority to make decisions, holding them accountable in ways in which you're encouraging good decisions, but also giving them great feedback on how to improve in the future, and then making sure they're motivated in wanting to make decisions. All of these are different factors that an owner that wants to scale has to evaluate and encourage within that leadership team, because ultimately, that's where a lot of owners get stuck. They go to two and three shops and realize their plate is full and they can't touch anything on their to-do list. I've heard it a million times. They start the day with this long to-do list, and by 5 p.m., they realize they haven't touched one thing on it because they're putting it and they're making decisions.
It gets longer.
Absolutely.
You have to accept the fact that you've got to work yourself out of a job.
That's it, Carm. And it's tough because there's owners want to be involved. That's why they oftentimes built a phenomenal business, because they micromanaged to the point where all the I's were dotted, all the T's were crossed. They were delivering a high level of service. Problems were being addressed, right? Relationships were built within the shop. And that changes when you have multiple shops. That responsibility has to be passed on. And what a lot of owners don't realize is once you get to that second or third shop, maybe that person that was a great shop manager, that was your number two Swiss Army knife, that could execute anything that you told him or her to do. Well, for the last many years that they were working for you, you were telling them what to do. You weren't asking them to make decisions. You weren't asking them and encourage them on how to solve problems. So you have to position them for success. And it's very hard for an owner, but you got to cede some of that authority and you have to let your people fall a little bit. Even in my organization, we had periods of underperformance when I intentionally told myself, I'm going to let my managers make decisions, and even if I didn't think they were the best ones.
You did that because you saw a much different future?
I did it because I needed my management team to feel like and take ownership in the business.
Step up.
And so if that meant a little bit of underperformance or maybe even a decision I wouldn't have made, sometimes it could have been, you know, a decision that works out just fine. But the important part is for them to take ownership, for them to take accountability. And that is not common among, you know, one or two shop locations where owners are very engaged.
Oh, you said a mouthful there. You may disagree with the decision that was made, but it worked out. And what you did by not getting involved, what you did by maybe even high-fiving the decision, is help that individual grow as a leader.
Absolutely. And if there's one thing an owner needs to be thinking about when it's scaling, it's people. Of course you need to worry about finances. Of course you need to worry about vendors. Of course you need to worry about your facilities. Everything is really important. But what I underestimated in the scaling process was the importance of people, specifically that management team. And that's part of the reason why I encourage anyone that wants to scale. I tell them recruiting is a year-round process, not something seasonal. And it doesn't mean you're hiring all year long, but you have to be talking to candidates and you have to put into the culture that you're having performance reviews and you're going to make sure retention's important. And, you know, we've heard it 1,000 times, Carm, culture, 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 culture. You can operate one or two shops with good culture. You cannot scale unless you have great culture.
That's a great point. I think that's one of those difficult, can't touch it things that many shop owners that are looking to improve, that are looking to become a better leader, that are going to school, that finally digging deep into the financial results of what happens over here, makes the profit over here. And ultimately, I can't seem to get past this 8% net and I need to get to 20. And the deep, if you will, cardiac surgery that was necessary to discover what's wrong comes up to culture, right? The angiogram says, hey, it's culture. Can't touch it. It's so hard. You know, mission, vision, values. And think about back when you started store one, store two. Is your culture now different? Is store five moving into seven?
It's a fantastic point, Carmen, that each shop is going to maintain its own culture, because culture isn't just defined and dictated by an owner or the leadership team. It's a culmination of the people in any given organization and the shop, but then the values have to be set. The mission should be set from ownership and leadership. So the culture is a little different in each shops, and you actually have to let that culture have some differences. The cadence can be a little different. How they have healthy communication and even competition within a shop differ from shop to shop. And that's, you know, one of the things we were talking about, Carm, is understanding that when you're scaling, whether it's 2 to 3 to 5 to 7, it's important to have a playbook. Here's who we are from a context, mission, vision, purpose, but here's also how we operate.
You said the word cadence, and I thought that was so powerful to think that we can have a universal culture and values in the company, but don't be so strict. If you got a great set of processes and procedures in play, some of your talent, some of your personalities that work inside the business are going to beat the drum slightly different. But as long as our processes and procedures are done, you know, if we get them done and it works, clients are happy, business is growing, let that rock beat work.
Right. And the truth is that folks in the automotive industry tend to have a higher level of independence, right, in thought and their operations. They're not working in necessarily corporate America and wearing a suit and, you know, just checking in, checking out. They actually do care about their job and what they're doing. At least the high performers are. So you have to give them the space to develop their own level of culture and identity as long as it's consistent with the values and missions of the organization. And I think this is where when shop owners think here's the playbook and we have to force it down some shop's neck, you know, that's not how we've operated when we've acquired an additional shop that has 40 years of history, that has a number of employees that have been there for a long time and care about their name, their brand, their team members, their customers. We try to make sure we're merging what we're doing with what they've already been doing well. And that takes time. It takes a lot of trust. And, you know, this is where it's important for ownership and leadership to walk the talk. Having mission, purpose, and values isn't about putting it on the wall. That's the reason, frankly, most people distrust hearing about mission statements, because ownership might put it on a wall and not actually live it out themselves. And it's critical to say, here's who we are. Here's how we operate. If you value community, are you doing community engagement? If you value development, are you encouraging training opportunities and having that part of performance reviews? You have to structure your organization consistent with who you say you are. Otherwise, it's just a lot of hot air.
Are you a Napa Auto Care Center who is ready to take your shop to the next level? Then the premier tier Napa Auto Care Gold Certified program is exactly what you need. Gold Certified Auto Care Centers provide customers with a consistent experience no matter where they are in the U.S. Now, this means they are more likely to return and support your shop or find your Gold Certified Auto Care Center while on the road. Gold Certified members can maximize technology, increase their local marketing opportunities, and have a fully trained team that keeps up with the latest trends. Simply put, the Gold Certified Napa Auto Care program powered by your local brand will set you apart. A true partnership is a two-way street. Shops must meet specific criteria to be eligible for the many benefits of gold. Now, Napa Auto Care rewards its most committed partners, their gold certified members, with free premium shop referrals on the Napa online locator, annual marketing dollars, an enhanced warranty, training opportunities, program rebates, and so much more. Are you ready to get started? Contact your local Napa sales representative to discuss your eligibility and apply today. More than 16% of light-duty vehicles on the road are EV and hybrid. Is your shop ready to safely and properly service them? Get your shop trained and equipped to service hybrid and EV vehicles with Napa Auto Tech's innovative EV-ready Level 1 high-voltage awareness and maintenance training. Hey, take your auto care center to the next level, the gold level, with the Napa Auto Care Gold Certified Program. This program is for the best of the best who can provide a consistent consumer experience and earn the trust of returning and new customers. Talk to your Napa sales representative about how you can become a gold certified shop. let's face it, your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NapaTrax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. NapaTrax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. NapaTrax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com. I want to cover the fact that I know people that own shops, one 8-bay shop, and he works 3 days a week because he doesn't want to scale. He's, I love my business. I got great people. We're growing all the time. We're marketing our butts off. And I have decided not to be a micromanager. And I've decided to have this hobby over here and do this over here. So you don't have to step back because now I own 5 or 7 stores. I'm sure you're working just as hard as you did when you had your first store, but you do not have to grow in store count to have a life.
You're absolutely right, Carm. The couple of things I would comment there is scaling shouldn't be done because it's the vogue thing to do.
Very good.
Right? Shop owners need to ask themselves the question, if they want to grow and have multiple locations, why? What is the motivation? And I would venture to say, if just making a few more dollars is your motivation, don't do it. Having one or two shops that are performing well, where you can focus on it, where you can hire good management and go work 3 days a week and go to the golf course and spend more time with your family and do the things that you love, that's the better option. I think for me, part of the motivation in growing was understanding that personal and professional development is something I have preached constantly within my organization. And the challenge with one shop operation that's performing really well is that from a professional development, where do those technicians grow into? Where does that foreman grow into? What does that shop manager grow into? And so part of the growth requirement in our organization is that we have places for people to grow as we're changing and evolving and innovating and dealing with the challenges of, you know, buying an 8-bay shop that's continuously been run that needs a turnaround versus a 3-bay building that doesn't have a business in it that we're trying to resuscitate from the ground up, right? And so each situation is different. And these challenges are not just a challenge for an owner, they're a challenge for a leadership team. And that, again, is the value in investing in a leadership team, making the culture of a leadership team fantastic. Because I'd encourage, Carm, if, you know, having a slower paced life and enjoying all the nice things of your personal life is your priority, scaling isn't your best option. It's challenging, and there's a lot of difficulties that come with it. And they're completely different than what the challenges were running a one roof, high volume, great automotive shop.
Siju, what was your why on store one?
As you know, Carm, I came from the investment world. I had not been in the automotive industry. And for many years, I put a suit on and I made money for the investors. And I thought to myself, you know, if I were to get out of this seat, at the end of the day, I'm a commodity. And I wanted to have more impact in my life, having grown up blue collar. And I thought to myself, you know what? If I'm operating a business, I could impact a community. I could impact employees. I could do something where I feel like, you know, there is value in my time spent. So from a selfish standpoint, I bought my first store because I didn't want to be a commodity. I wanted to have an impact, and I wanted to have an impact on people. And tell me how many other industries out there are so people-centric, like the automotive industry, as it relates to our customers, our vendors, our employees. This is a great industry, and it's a great place to, frankly, impact your community.
I love your answer. Thank you. When you talk to other people in the industry, and you get into the why scenario for them. Are you hearing, I want to fix people's cars, I love it, I want to take care? Are you hearing the words, I want to grow financial for myself, my people, I want to build opportunities for all these great people? And the word career path keeps coming into my mind. It seems to me that the why of wanting to scale your business is much bigger than if you owned one store and you just wanted to get a paycheck.
That's right, Carm. That's absolutely right. I can say fairly consistently with the multi-shop owners that I'm friends with, I affiliate myself with, have great conversations with, nearly everyone, and I really can't even think of an exception, has a why that relates to people improving lives, helping their employees, improving their communities. There has to be something altruistic there, because there's lots of ways you can make money in the world. And frankly, in the automotive industry, there's a lot of things that are tough, managing a shop, managing automotive professionals. And we can go through a list of the challenges that we have in the automotive industry, but that'll take two or three more episodes. But understanding how difficult it is, the why has to start with people and community. And then certainly, if you don't have a good compass with what is responsible business, how do we make the right sort of margins? Because if you're not focused on financial performance and KPIs, what that means is you're actually going to erode your business in the long run and put at risk people's livelihoods and jobs. People get bonuses and raises and career opportunity as a product of high-performing, profitable businesses. Profitability isn't for the benefit of just an owner. It's for the benefit, it should be for the benefit of all stakeholders, including employees, including vendors. And certainly, we start with the customers at the very beginning.
I love this. This is great stuff. I can't imagine how difficult it would be for you and your team to market for all these different five stores, four different brands. But I love your concept. Let me go take a 40-year legacy business that's got, had a great name, faltered in the last few years, but we could possibly resurrect it. Well, I can't seem to have, you know, it's not just Thomas's and Hotchkiss's. It's just one name. Wow, what a heavy lift.
It is. And frankly, that is one of the bigger challenges I'm coping with right now and trying to figure out on my Rubik's Cube, how do I unlock the success of having so many brands? I think one thing that's absolutely critical, and owners and leaders in this industry that are affiliated with great shops understand this. When you run a best-in-class automotive business, then customers come to you. And so the critical part of any acquisition I make of a business, I won't do a reputation turnaround. It has to be a business that has an extraordinary reputation. Now, business might be faltering because of mismanagement, might not have the right personnel, but ultimately the integrity has to be there. It has to shine through with customers. And if you have a A-plus reputation business, frankly, you can have a B-minus marketing operation and be okay. And I've seen that in our organization where certain parts of the business, the marketing could be improved in this way or that way. And your conversations with SEO and pay-per-click and, you know, website design and all of these things have probably been highly detailed with other experts. In our organization, we spend a tremendous amount of time on marketing because there's so many brands. But I don't know that I'm going to give ourselves an A-plus in our efforts, but I will give ourselves an A-plus with every single one of our brands in terms of reputation, what the market thinks about us, and people just showing up at the shop saying, oh my gosh, we read your reviews. It can't be true. So we just need to try you guys out. And lo and behold, you know, we deliver that service that is akin to high-level hospitality industry type of service, and it resonates with customers, and that is your best marketing.
Great, great point. I can't imagine what heavy lift that is, but it all makes sense, everything that you're saying. I want to talk about ABR, always be recruiting. You brought that up a little bit ago, and so my question to you is, if you open the top left drawer of your desk, how many resumes do you have in there?
It's over 1,000. The amount of resumes I have saved down is unreal. And the key thing is, and this is a common thread, Carm, that I've already mentioned numerous times, recruiting cannot solely be a responsibility of the owner. Our leadership team has been trained and reared over the years that everyone is involved in recruiting. Everyone. And even to the extent that, you know, if we have a candidate coming into any given shop, now our technicians, even a junior level technician, knows that they might get pulled in to go have a conversation with a candidate we have sitting in the front office, right? It's something that from an organization perspective, everyone has to know that we're always talking to candidates. One, that's important because if you don't recruit often and there's a recruit in the front office, then someone's wondering who's getting fired, right? And it creates this sense of discomfort and you don't want that. What I want is a sense of we're always talking to candidates. We're always looking to grow and things happen. And especially as you have a larger organization, there's going to be some turnover here and there. And so if everyone has this understanding that we're always recruiting, it also creates this mentality that everyone is selling the organization. And if you have to sell the organization, what do you have to do? Now you have to walk the talk. Now the technicians have to say what our values are and our mission is. And when they go back to the shop floor, what are they doing? Asking themselves, am I living the mission? Am I you doing the operating values that I need to do? So it creates some self-policing and accountability in the organization when we're always talking to great candidates.
I love your point because when you teach, you learn. If an individual was, if you will, in the teach or recruit mode, says, oh, yeah, it's a great place to work, blah, blah, blah. And he goes back and he, yeah, I guess it is a great place to work. You don't second guess yourself because you are now part of the recruitment effort. And if you're close enough to the leadership and they're asking you to always be recruiting, then you would know if your job was at risk because of the performance reviews. And when you have this first store and now you have another one, it says, I got to get over there and make sure I hang with the people. But then the first store is going to think you don't love me anymore. How do you balance that?
It's a reality that oftentimes your employees will correlate how much you care about the shop with how much you're physically there. And it's a challenge I dealt with over the years. And luckily for me, I'm a workaholic. My team knows it. And they've had to recognize my care in ways that are not physically being at the shop. And part of it is also ensuring that when things are needed and when priorities come up, that I'm there. And that's not just, you know, something bad happened and I need to show up. But when we have a great week, show up. Let's do a pizza party. Let's go to the neighborhood brewery and all get some beers and still stay engaged in people's personal lives, understand what matters, but then really asking and encouraging and recruiting for people-centered individuals. The shop managers need to be involved. When you have one or two shops, what is the owner doing? Leading most of the meetings. What is the owner doing? Sitting through the performance reviews, if not leading them all. At some point, I had to tell myself, am I doing a disservice for this organization if I'm sitting down on every technician performance review? They need to get hired, not by new technicians need to be hired, not by me, but by that shop manager. And sure, I develop a relationship with them. But the key is the automotive industry is one in which automotive professionals oftentimes are loyal to the owner. But that's not healthy in a growing organization. They need to be loyal to their team. Tell me how many basketball teams, football teams are loyal to the brand more so than the team. It's the team. It's the people. It's the team members next to you that players have to play for.
Great stuff. Let's go back in history here. Store two. I've talked to so many people that said, hey, I got my store two. And if you sat them down in a quiet, dark place and you said confession, they would tell you that. Whoops. And we struggled a whole lot with it. Go back to store two. What would you do different? Or maybe even advice for anybody thinking of store two.
You know, I think the thing about store two for me was I wasn't thinking at all about store three. I made it a point when store two came up to just be laser focused on splitting my time between the two shops. That's why I actually think the third shop is harder than the second shop. That's a little bit of a different opinion than what most others would think. But the reason why I thought store three was so much harder is because once we got to three shops, I couldn't be at all three every day. I was able to be at both of my first two shops every day, half days, open one, close the other. right? So it still just felt like I was, you know, part of the daily operations. I wasn't management. I was engaged with the customers. I knew everything that was going wrong. If something went sideways at 11 a.m. and I wasn't there, it's fine because I'd be there by 1:30. So the second shop was actually easy because I frankly maintained my job responsibility of being the operations manager, whereas store three is where I had to give up that organizational, I'm involved in every problem. And that is where the light bulb clicked on. Wait a minute, I need to trust others. I need to train others and I need to encourage others to make decisions, solve problems, and make sure that, you know, we're performing at a high standard.
So prepare to clone yourself for store two, which is what I just heard you say. And for store three, the word scale comes in.
Right. Carm, remember, it's that common adage for high performers. You can't scale yourself.
Exactly.
So if you want to scale a business, you have to do it with a team. So this is where, you know, lone wolves type of operators have a lot of success because they have a very high standard on excellence and they want to micromanage everything themselves.
Okay, let's bring this to an end with a scenario. I meet you at a conference and we kind of, this really cool bond going, and I hear about your great stores and your growth patterns, and I'm a 1-5 bay operation, not doing too bad. And I say, Saju, what's going to be my biggest challenge? Should I do this? I mean, I'm looking for advice. What would you say the top 3 or 4 things you would ask me to see if I'm ready or prepared?
You know, the first thing I would say, and this isn't going to be any surprise because it's been something I've touched on a number of times, it's for your current single shop, tell me about your manager there. What is he or she responsible for? Do they actually drive decision-making, capital spends? Are they the ones performing reviews? Are they the ones that deal with bad news, good news? What is their involvement with a disgruntled customer? And if the answer is, oh, this manager, they're on top of it. They run this shop as if they own it themselves. They're passionate about the brand. The team is loyal to that manager. I'd say, let's go. You're ready for shop 2.
That's simple. You don't care if I'm making money or not, right?
Well, in theory, you shouldn't be thinking about shop 2 unless you're making money at shop 1.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to hear. Okay. The amount of money as a percent of sales is a relative thing. And you say, well, I made 10%. Maybe you need to be making 20 because you're going to have costs and maybe the store 2 is going to suffer a little bit. Maybe store 1 has to carry it. Not the manager has to carry it, but you, the owner, has to figure out how to carry it. So I love that. What great advice. Tell me about your manager at shop 1.
And you know what? I'll actually piggyback on that last point you made. One thing that's really critical about that manager, and it's something that you'll notice I don't talk a lot about because it's almost assumed, is in when asking about a great manager, implicitly, it's, do they know the KPIs? If I were to ask them, what's your parts GP margin? What's your labor GP margin? What's your parts to labor ratio? How are you pricing X product different than Y product? What percentage of your total revenue is maintenance? How much might be breaks? Right? If they don't know the answers to those questions, then fundamentally, you know, they might be a good assistant manager, but a manager needs to also manage numbers. And so, yeah, I would encourage, I tend not to talk about those items as much because to me, it's a prerequisite. You got to know your KPIs because someone like me is extraordinarily focused on the KPIs. And if I don't think my managers are paying attention to it, it means I have to pay attention to it. And by definition, my job is to take on less responsibility and make sure my managers are covering important topics because there's always going to be a million things on my to-do list.
If your current manager doesn't have an owner's attitude, mentality, persona, and you haven't taken them to classes with you, they're not hey, boss, let me see the P&L, let me see the KPIs, or, hey, let's go over the week. Here's where we are. Here's what our efficiency rates are. If they're not into the deep end of the pool with you on the KPI, the financial side of the business, and you need to go and spend time at store two, I know your point, 4 hours here, 4 hours there, but I know what's going to happen. It's going to be 8 hours at store two, while the confidence that you have in the leadership that you left there can allow you to make the investment of your time, not only your money. I think it's such a huge point. It's like playing Monopoly. It's like, oh, I'm going to put another hotel on my box. Flip it up, look underneath and see all the stuff that's going on inside the hotel.
Right. And so we're talking right now about tactically what someone knows and their skill set. But you have to take a step backwards. And number one, as an owner, really evaluate if you are hungry and humble. You can't be hungry to learn and develop unless you exhibit humility. And that means you are focused on training and developing and understand where the industry is going. And as long as you embody that, your management absolutely unequivocally must. Because if they're not hungry and humble to go learn and develop, and hey, you're going to go to store two, so maybe I haven't had to do A, B, and C, but I'm going to train for that. I'm going to develop in these areas, right? Because there's going to be a leadership vacuum. Okay, the type of managers that have been in the industry for 20 years and, you know, they puff their chest out about all their, you know, successful ARO numbers and car count numbers, and that's it. Sorry, this industry is getting more sophisticated. It's getting more competitive, and the experience is valuable. But what's even more valuable is that level of humility and that eagerness to learn and develop. So there's plenty of good managers out there that just need more opportunity and push to become extraordinary managers.
Hungry and humble. There's one other word that gets attached to that a lot. I can't remember what it was. And I swear that one of maybe your friends or my friends have been on the show before have come on and done a show on hungry, humble, and smarter.
The third one I've always used is capable, right? Because you want humble people, you want hungry people, but they have to have capabilities. And I'm not sure if that's the market adage that everyone says. It's what I think about. They have to still have baseline capabilities today to plug in to have a value add.
Hungry, humble, and smart. That's what I always thought it was. And that could lend itself into capable. Absolutely. I so enjoy this. I think what we did is knocked out a perfect episode on scaling. I think you brought great insights. I think you may have tempered some people who want to grow for the sake of growing. I also think you brought a lot of hungry, humble, and smart and capabilities to people that say, hey, we're this close, but we need to fix, you know, it was great to hear from Siju and to hear what he's doing. Thank you for being here. Five shops in the Denver, Colorado area, right?
That's right.
All different names.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the website. I saw all the different names. Applewood, Arvada.
Arvada Square, Applewood, Hotchkiss Auto, and a couple locations of Advanced Transmission Center.
Wow, how cool is that? Well, look at, thanks. Come back.
Absolutely, Carm. I'll be on anytime you like. This is always a fun time.
Siju Thomas, multi-shop owner out of Denver. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.